Okay, make sure you're in fellowship as here in Genesis 11, beginning the operation of Tower of Babel. The Bible gives us a linguistic lesson, and that is providing us how, if you will, the mankind came to speak so many different languages. And the fact is that at one time we all shared a common language among us, as all men came from one single family, Noah's sons, otherwise in that respect. And science itself, people that are high up in regards to the studies of linguistics, have come to recognize that there is a mystery attached to communication skills, how we're able to speak, and things of this nature, even though these still may reject the truth of doctrine concerning the matter. They recognize that there is a, if you will, mother tongue from which all other dialects and languages have extended from over the course of time, no matter how they may try to explain that otherwise. And in this respect, we recognize the truth of doctrine in regards to God and His plan for man, and that God created man with the ability to speak. And He created us unique as rational thinking beings, able to think abstractly, and then having the means, the ability physically, neurologically, and otherwise to communicate our feelings in a very sophisticated way. So God obviously made the original, the pure language from Eden, which Adam began to speak immediately upon his creation of body. And he made the pure form of language, just like he made the pure form of animals. And from that, obviously, you had diversity that comes about over time. Adaptation, if you will, in regards to environment, things of this nature, in regards to the animal world. And so the ability to adapt, to diversify, is seen in regards to God's creation. And therefore, just as one language does not resemble another, such as Chinese to English, we have different varieties, species, if you will, types of dogs. One does, Great Dane doesn't look like a Chihuahua, see. So 51 is where we left off in our notes here, point 51, page 4. In going over this, to me, this is pretty neat stuff. 51, Christopher Columbus, to show us, give an example of how diversification can come about and how easily it can come about. Christopher Columbus' first mate was a Jew named Torres, and he was responsible for naming the exotic New World's large fantail pheasant. 52, he named it a tuki, which is means an exotic bird in Hebrew. Others heard it as turkey. So, immediately you can see how one may change and how etymology of words and things of this nature and sounds change over time. Just like we see different spellings of names over time. 53, he also named the New World cannibals Caleb, which is dog in Hebrew. 54, this was heard as, quote, Carib, end quote. And so the region of the Carib people came to be called the Caribbean. All those nice little islands that you visit had the history of cannibalism attached to them. Go visit those back in the 1700s. What's for dinner? You are. Have a seat. 55, the first universities, I almost guarantee you, your kids are not going to be taught these things in school. So hence another reason of the importance of doctrine. parents to children. 55, the first universities in America, Harvard and Yale, have Hebrew among their course requirements and their school mottos. The importance of the Hebrew language has been recognized by many over the years. 56, the first doctrinal dissertation in the New World at Harvard School of Divinity is about Hebrew as the mother tongue. The Hebrew language being the common language from which all the diversity of other languages came from. 57, later the Continental Congress debated whether Hebrew should become the new American language rather than English. They actually had a discussion about what they discussed today. All the stupidity and stuff that goes on when we were first founded. This actual debate came about in regards to what our official language should be. And Hebrew was a forerunner, front runner in this potential. 58, Noah Webster, America's premier lexicographer, the dictionary, gives many Semitic, as you will, etymologies for English words in what was supposed to be the Great American Dictionary. You look up in your dictionary, you'll see an etymology of their derivation, where they come from, where they originate, sometimes French, a lot of Greek, etc. He was developing a dictionary that was able to put words together with the Hebrew language in that respect. 59, for example, he cites Yeled, which is boy in Hebrew, and the LD root appears throughout Semitic language as the source of what we know as lad, where lad came from. 60, by contrast, the Oxford English Dictionary says, quote, origin unknown, end quote. 61, Webster's work would soon be eclipsed by the British Ben Jonson and the Europeans' new thinking that biblical theories were embarrassingly old-fashioned in the new man-centered age of reason. So you see the trend of the New Age movement that obviously became a big splash in my generation, actually occurring way before our time, and had its hooks in already in regards to Europe and a direct effect upon our country otherwise. 62, so Harvard, and this in the educational academic circles and schools, this has that effect. So Harvard trashed the Hebrew emet, for truth, for the Latin motto virtus, truth. 63, the American Heritage Dictionary put out their chart of Proto-Indo-European languages. The prototypes are the origins, if you will, the models. And its derivatives having 13 branches. So their research, etc., they said the Indo-European models were 13 models of which you have all the derivations of language in those societies. There's 13 primary languages or branches. 64, when Genesis 10 lists the subfamilies of Japheth, which the Indo-European family or race identification comes from, his lineage, the total is 14, uncannily close. So who's wrong? They just didn't do their homework quite well enough. 65, Abrams, or to be Abraham, a native Chaldee, was spun off from Edenic at Babel, came off the mother tongue to be the Chaldean language. 66, how then could Abram found a clan of Hebrew speakers as the new race sponsored by God rather than a dialect breakoff of Chaldean? You would think there would be a modification simply within the language otherwise of his home upbringing. But no, he is known for the purity of the Hebrew language. 67, observing the timeline, it is easier to presume that Shem, son of Noah, never lost his Edenic language. One of the things that we need to recognize going into this passage at the Tower of Babel, that the positive volition did not have a part of this. Hence Shem, the line of Christ, those of that positive ilk, phase two, were not going to be part of this new world order and rebellion against God that we see that occurs with respect to the mass of humanity otherwise. So, looking at that fact, and that Shem carries on the line from which the Hebrew race then emerges, speaking this Hebrew language, tells us that the mother tongue was not lost in regards to the line of Shem. 68, seeing how Moses used a wordplay on the names of Shem and Eber as we went through the chronology, ones in regards to Shem meaning name and Eber the root for Hebrew Passover, Eber, to highlight the impending Hebrew line in Moses' writing. He utilizes this. Then could Peleg's name, which means division or separation, be a clue that this family line remained aloof from the Babel events, avoided judgment, and retained the mother tongue? The judgment of speaking in different languages came upon the people involved in the Tower of Babel. And that, we would surmise, came from all the other nations apart from the line of Shem, going through Eber, Arpachshad, Canaan, Eber, and Peleg, etc. So, one, obviously, would ask that question. And we see how Moses, through this section, has utilized word games to illustrate and highlight some otherwise unapparent information on the surface. Again, it's really a manifestation of the very thing that we're dealing with, and that is the intellectual capability and thinking abilities that mankind possesses to be able to do things like that. See, to put it in your language subtly in hidden ways to communicate other aspects. See, as smart as your dog is, he can't do that, or she. I hold no gender bias in regards to animals. Regards to animals, that's what I said. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, it's my contention that. It's possible that even though Abraham was associated with the Chaldeans and learned their language, that he probably, that the mother tongue was probably retained even within their line at that point in time. And that essentially he just took the obvious, the Edenic language, the mother tongue, the common tongue, the language that was spoken since Adam and Eve in Eden, and made it the language of God, you see, in that regards. But otherwise, others have investigated this. 69, Shem and his son Eber are thought to have taught this language to Abraham, if he was taught the language. I don't see why he would have to be taught necessarily, but you know, we don't know. So I think it'd go either way. 70 Shem lived about a century and a half, if you want to look at it in this sequence, in this way. That Shem was around, obviously, when Abram was born. He lived about a century and a half, around 1800 B.C., after the birth of Abram in 1950 B.C. These guys still lived pretty long lives back then, 400 years, etc. So 71, there was able opportunity for Abram to have contact with Shem or Eber, and you would think that they would, looking at Paul's volition, essentially staying in contact with Paul's volition over time, generally speaking. And so there's able opportunity, point 71, for Abram to have had contact with Shem or Eber and came to master the Edenic mother tongue and make it the language of his new race. 72, it is the contention of astute theologians that the oldest human speech was proto-Semitic. It was modeled in regards to the Hebrew line, language, coming from the line of Shem. We know that Noah and his three sons smote. They probably did that too. Spoke the mother tongue after the flood. They came from the pre-diluvian era. Everyone was speaking the same language. And the line of Shem, out of the line of Shem, all of a sudden you have Abraham coming out with this language that is foreign to the national linguistic identity of where he lived, Chaldea. Now, where did the Hebrew language come from? Did God just supernaturally put it in his brain computer? No, it's still in existence. This language. And it's unique to Semitic people from the line of Shem. So, it's our contention, studying the Old Testament, we're studying off the same language, at least a prototype, if you will, the very language that Adam and Eve spoke when God created man. Hebrew language is very unique. It's simple in concept. But yet it's so colorful, so expressive, so meaningful. It's really a phenomenon in and of itself. Greek is usually considered to be highly technical in regards to its grammatical aspects. Hebrew gives you room to think. That's the way I like to look at it. You put your thoughts together doctrinally with the context, etc., etc., and it's unbelievable how communicative it is in regards to the ability to transfer information from one to another. 73, man possesses a unique throat bone called the hyoid bone to enable speech far more sophisticated than dolphins or than any other species that hunts and gathers. Even our anatomy is unique for being able to speak. 74, the evolutionary, what's called the bow wow theory, predicts that languages would have names for dogs that sound like bark. And that's what you would think. If it's evolving, then it's coming from and stemming to that which it would be so closely parallel to, the sounds of the animal. And hence a dog, you would name call a dog bark, because that's what he does, see. But 75, none do. So the bow wow theory is for the dogs. 76, the linguistic Langacre, in reference back, previous notes, he's old school. He's one that does not buy into the mother tongue field. He notes how dozens of unrelated languages have papa-type words in his research. Our word in the Hebrew for words is dvar, words. for mother, or for father and mama sounding words for mother. Again, the linguistic language knows how dozens of unrelated languages have papa-type words for father and mama-sounding words for mother. So 77, he believed that M and P sounds, M-M-P, were the earliest made by babies. The reality is that Gaga is the first baby sound. And there are no mother or father words like Gaga in any of the languages. The Aleph Mem, the E-M in the Hebrew, which is our word for mother, reverses to be May, where you get the preposition from, as from a mother. So you reverse the word mother, and it means from, from a mother. While the Hebrew Aleph Bet, which is our Hebrew father, reverses to mean come, as in come from. So father is, if you will, a step apart from simply from. Then you come from the father. You come directly from the mother, but you come from the father. See, that's the idea. And that is reverse is a word for our Hebrew word bow. Our word mother, Aleph M, Aleph Mem, reverse it. M. Your preposition me, from. Then Aleph Bait, father, reverse it, and it's Bo, come. Come from. Anyway. The only Hebrew offers meaning or sense to sounds. 81, only human beings are sapient. Only human beings are thinking, rational creatures. 82, the ability to think and speak is a divine gift. And this gift of language was given to man at his creation and diversified into some 70 super languages at Babel, or 69, as it may be. 83, subsequently, there are 5,000 to 6,000 sub-dialects in the world. That's a lot. 84, the Stanford professor, Joseph A. Greenberg, proved that there were only 8 true African languages, not hundreds deriving from the original 8, quote, super languages, end quote. There are 8 true African languages. The others are all just simply variations of that. 85, linguists counted hundreds of American Indian languages, and Greenberg also proved there were only 3 Amerind super languages. All these were simply variations. It went off just like English moving to the South. Start calling everybody y'all rather than their brothers and sisters that stayed back in New York calling y'all use. See, we understand that. Use just sounds funny to me because I'm from the y'all part of the country, or the creek part of the country, not the creek. A creek's what you got in your neck. A creek is what you fish for. See? All right. Had enough of that goofiness. So 86, for decades, his, that being Joseph Greenberg, His work was bitterly opposed, and only now is considered valid. And you find that in the field of science. You have those people that have power, have money. Their agendas are usually promoted, often promoted. How long did certain parts of society believe the world was flat? See, even though others have said, no, it's round. One who knew doctrine and was a sound theologian would know the world's round, not flat. AD 7, most contemporary linguists can accept monogenesis of language. A single beginning. Mono, one, genesis, beginning. They had a single, singular beginning, common beginning. 88, Robin Dunbar, or Dunbar, I'm thinking movies this morning. If you know which movie that is, and you're doing pretty good. Robin Dunbar does not add a dozen zeros to the theoretical timeline here, as evolutionists tend to do. And he writes, Babel, quote, Babel may not have been so very long ago. The Tower of Babel was no myth. It really did exist. The myth makers of ancient Israel seem to have been on to something. Linguists now believe that the world's languages do, in fact, have a common origin. However, the period of this common language long predates the building of the Tower of Babel. It wasn't just at that point in time. It goes back to the very beginning of restoration, the planet Earth. Some 1,500 years earlier, 16. 89, reference sources for the above include the website The Tower of Babel and the Confusion of Languages by Lambert Dolphin. That's an interesting read. It's not that long. Principal emphasis is from, quote, History of the Idea of the Monogenesis of Language, end quote, by Isaac Mason and Joshua Benn. 90, the above is designed as an apologetic, an argument of defense, to demonstrate that this forthcoming story of the diversification of human speech is supported by hard science. Otherwise, men have no explanation. Truly, I mean anything logical. 91, the language of Noah and his family was the language of the antediluvians. And this language persisted universally after the flood to the time of the dispersion in the days of Peleg. As a people, as a whole. That's what we're stating here. All men. 92, this means the mother tongue continued to be the singular speech for over a century. 93, thus the background for Genesis 11, 1 through 9 is post-flood. And asserts that human-to-human communication consisted of one language, which is literally lip in the Hebrew, and one vocabulary or words. One phonetic sound with one meaning to each of the sounds. That's what we're stating. 94, this does not contradict Genesis 10 that tells us in three verses that the nations were divided into two separate languages. 95, rather, Genesis 11 tells us how the diversification of the languages came to be after the fact. 96, an alternate translation of verse 1 is, and the entire world had one language and one speech. 97, this image of the whole world underscores unity. It shows what makes possible the very scenario that we're now going to address with the Tower of Babel and what occurred in that situation. And that is a commonality of agenda and ability for almost the entire population, with the exception of humanity, to do what they did as one. So in 98, there was no language barrier, and so men could readily exchange ideas and work together. In 99, the Sumerian, Sumer being the same as Shinar, the land of Shinar, which Babylonia, Babel, all this takes place in that geographical region. The Sumerian epic entitled Enmerkar, and the Lord of Arata, speaks at a time when, quote, the whole universe in unison spoke to Enlil in one tongue, end quote. Just an example of the traditions handed down. 100, it goes on to report that the speech was confounded as a result of jealousy and strife between two gods. Close, but not quite accurate. One is the true God, the other one is the false god, Satan, trying to do what he's doing. All right, well, the dilemma is, if we start something that we're going to wait 2 weeks to start, pick back up, or just let you go? You know how I am. Have a good holiday. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, to continue to light us to these things. In Jesus' name, amen.